Granite City Electric Supply is proud to be celebrating 100 years of service in New England. With over 30 branches serving electrical contractors and their exclusive GCE Night Train overnight delivery, they've built their business on enduring relationships and delivering your supplies. More importantly, Granite City Electric customers always have access to over $50 million of local inventory at the click of a mouse at GraniteCityElectric.com. Granite City Electric, proud partner of the Boston Bruins Radio Network.
Now, Sports Talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
The sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in 5 and 10. Listening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
See, this is from Home Alone, one of the top Christmas movies of all time. We're going to get to that later in the show. We got something for you later. The stupidity of the state of Rhode Island. Oh, state for state.
I think we've got bigger issues than Rhode Island, my friend.
Well, why do you say that?
I've looked at the entire 50 state, man.
Yep.
It's a problem.
There's some issues out there with some people.
Got some problems.
You can tell the inbred states where they're at. There's guns in that movie, then. Heck yeah. I like Die Hard.
Yeah. Bert Breer is with us from the MMQB in studio for the next couple of hours. Bill Belichick is going to speak probably somewhere around 11:35, 11:45.
Yeah.
They move it back to 45 again?
Yes, sir.
All right, so 11:45 is Bill. We'll get to that when he speaks. Stephon Gilmore is our scheduled Patriot guest today. I have no idea when he's going to call because we have any idea when they're going to call.
Right.
So we'll just play it by ear. When he calls,
and the Maven's all fired up to be back on with us this Friday.
Is
he? Yes. Okay. He's back.
He's excited. He's already tweeting about it that he's already
scheduled. Right. So, that was like a reverse jinx then.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, he was rooting for, he should have been rooting for a loss if he wanted to get back on.
Okay. So, like, they were 0-2 when he came on.
Yeah. I got video of him partying.
So now they're 0-1 when you guys cancel on him. So the reverse jinx is back.
Right. Reverse jinx.
So now he's been able to declare that he was not the reason for the losses, and he can come on.
Okay.
He can speak freely on Fridays.
And he ended up on stage in Pittsburgh somewhere, and I have video.
On stage?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Video?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
He's a dancing machine? Dude, no. He's a party animal.
Yeah. It's private. Private video.
Party animal. Okay. Bert, Zoe has a belief, and Zoe, maybe it's better you explain it than I do.
Yeah, I mean, you're pissed off the way things went down in Pittsburgh, and I think we would feel differently about that game and be okay with that game. 14 penalties, you lose the game to a good team. If you took care of business in Miami and had everything locked up and still had the number two seed and everybody else is still screwing themselves up. And then you sit there and you watch.
Yep.
You know, Drew Brees just hit check down after check down after check down. And then they're going to get creative and try and run something different inside the five, be stupid, fumble the ball, have a touchback.
You know, see,
Cam Newton couldn't get anything cranked up. And yet, I know they dirtied that game up. They muddied it. It was a defensive rock fight. But I'm thinking, this thing, you got 2 weeks to get ready for that. That's the number one seed in the NFC? Like, this thing's wide-ass open, man, to me. For everybody. And I'm not saying that's good for the Patriots. That could be bad for the Patriots because there's more parity.
All right, so the Saints haven't played particularly well the last 3 weeks.
Who has? Tell me who has, other than the Chargers.
What I like about the Saints is the Saints got taken out of their element against the Panthers, right? They got taken out of their element against the Bucs. They got taken out of their element against the Cowboys. That first week, you could feel how uncomfortable they were playing in that sort of, like, this rock fight of a game. I think they're learning to win a different way. And so I actually like where the Saints are at. The last two games were outdoors, and they won't have to go outdoors again. Their last two games are at home in the Superdome, and they assuming they win one of the two, then the road to the Super Bowl is going to go through there. I actually like the fact that the Saints had to win these games a different way because I think there are Saints teams in the past that would not win those games. So I like where they're at. Obviously, there's huge reason for a concern with the Rams. I don't trust Mitch Trubisky in Chicago.
Yep.
And now on this side of the bracket, Houston still has the offensive line issue. Houston still has the corner issue. So those issues that they had when they came here in week one still exist.
Don't they have a Philly issue this week too?
I think the two teams that are probably the teams that you look at and say, end to end, they're the best in the AFC or the two teams in the AFC West. The Chiefs are overwhelming on offense, but no more Kareem Hunt, and their defense can't stop anyone. And so, like, that, then it's down to the Chargers. And so I think the two most complete teams in football right now are the Chargers and the Saints. The two teams that can beat you the most amount – the two teams that can beat you the most amount of ways that, like, when you take something away from them, they're going to have an answer are those two teams. And I really liked what the Chargers did on Thursday night. Rivers played so well down the stretch. And that throw to Travis Benjamin is one of the probably the 10 best throws I've seen a quarterback make in that sort of situation.
Okay. So,
all right, so he did that without Keenan Allen and Melvin Gordon. Like, he brought them down the field twice in that situation without Keenan Allen and Melvin Gordon.
Okay, so work this out with me real quick. So if the Chiefs are the number one seed, say, yeah. give the number two to Houston.
Okay.
Okay, then New England would be three. Say Pittsburgh is four. So you're telling me that...
They got to go to... Four
will play five, which means five would be the Chargers. So Pittsburgh would play the Chargers.
And I think the Chargers...
Think about this.
I would take the Chargers in that game.
You would take the Chargers, Pittsburgh. So you would be, you would have to play probably the Colts as the other wild card, meaning New England. So say you beat them,
then you're playing Houston in the round. In round,
you're playing
two.
Houston, and the Chiefs and are playing the Chargers again.
Right.
Oh man.
Which is like, I mean, that's
which to my point, I think makes it wide ass open for everybody.
Right. And I'd
see?
Be, I'll tell you what,
because you could win. I think you could win in Houston. I'd and be, get in an AFC title game.
I'd be fascinated to see what Bill O'Brien and Romeo Crennel and that group would do with two weeks to prepare for the Patriots, right? With 2 weeks to get ready, get healthy, get going for the Patriots. Because two years ago.
It was a playoff game with Osweiler here where they struggled against them.
The Texans that year.
That was a variable game.
Gave them a lot of problems. Like on the deep. Now, eventually.
Eventually, in the middle, they would walk Clowney in.
Yeah, yep. Eventually the dam broke. And eventually, like, just Brock Osweiler, like, that wound up getting the Texans. The fact that Brock Osweiler was their quarterback. But that Texans team hung tough. Mm-hmm. And so. You look at it, and the Texans are like, I'd rather play the Texans in the second round than I'd play than the Chargers. But I mean, I think there's an element there with Rack, with Billy O'Brien, with Deshaun Watson being different than he was in week one, where it's winnable, it's not a layup.
Are you anointing the Chargers the team that has the least holes, much like you did with the Chiefs a year ago?
Carolina.
That's what I want to know.
Carolina too. Carolina was the most well-rounded
team.
I think
their quarterback's hurt now, so I don't know. I think I get a mulligan on that one. The Chargers, yes, I think they're the team with the least holes. Like they've got good defensive backs, right? One of the best rookies in the league back there in Derwin James. Good linebackers, great defensive line, very good offensive line, good running backs, good receivers, great quarterback. There's not a glaring hole in that roster.
So
plus looks like they might get Hunter Henry back too.
Yes.
We can alert ESPN on that.
We can let Stephen A. Smith know. When it comes to this topic of the Chargers specifically, I hate the Chargers, right? I've hated them forever. I can't stand the Chargers.
I love Rivers.
They're so nondescript.
I don't know. It's the Patriot
fan
in me.
They show up and they ball.
That goes back to Lights Out and Sean Merriman, and I hate it.
That's such
a hateable team, and I don't like – I just find the personality of their quarterback so hateable.
Yeah.
And so that I just find it hateable. I've always hated the Chargers, and I think they're the biggest fraud team of this generation.
Do you think this version is
no, a fraud? No. I think the Chargers in general and the Chargers in the Philip Rivers era is the biggest fraud team ever. They're just the greatest team that never was.
What about this version?
And so this year, I held on to that as long as I could, and I'm now at the point where I've started to give in and admit it that the Chargers are a really good team, and I have to admit that now, and I have to just sort of give in to what I'm seeing and give in to what everybody's seeing on the Chargers, that they're putting it together. So it pains me to do it. It pains me to agree with you on this, Bert, because I just don't like them. But – it makes me feel better that they're your pick because you picked the Chiefs last year.
Yeah.
We went to that makes me feel better that I'm with the Breer Jinx. I'm feeling better about this.
That
the Breer Jinx.
That one didn't work out for me.
Remember when you used to pick Cincinnati, how sexy that pick used to be, too?
Hold on.
I deserve everything I get for that one.
You did pick Kansas City very early in the year, much earlier than where we are now.
Right.
That was earlier in the season.
I don't think we can overstate how impressive what they did that Thursday on that Thursday night game was. Okay, on 4 days rest, going on the road to Arrowhead and coming back from two touchdowns down with like 6 minutes left.
Awesome. Huge, huge stones.
Right.
Putting it together.
I just think like under Anthony Lynn, they're tougher than they've been.
He's the only likable guy.
They're a gutsy team under him.
Yeah. I mean, I just think he's done a really good job. They're 20-6.
He'll take risks.
Or 21-6 or 21-6.
21-6 now.
In their last 27.
Yeah. I mean, they've
it's incredible.
And he's done and like he's built a tough team. Like he's a Parcells guy, mm-hmm. and you can see the toughness. And I think actually like everything that they've been through over the last 2 years, like they had to spend half the year in San Diego after they announced the move.
Right.
I don't know if a lot of people realize that. Like, they stayed based in San Diego until training camp. So they all those guys are dealing with that. Then they moved to LA and they're sort of nomads for like a few months before their facility opens.
Right.
Every home game is is basically like an away game. Like, they start 0-4 last year. I think all this stuff that they've dealt with has actually made them who they are. That's a tough team, and to be able to do that, to be able to come back from two touchdowns down in Kansas City that way, and some of the plays they were making, it's just a really, really tough team. And I think if they didn't have like the lightning bolts on the helmet, and you didn't know, like if they were just some, like if this team just like you took the logos out the helmet and you said like just take a look at this team and what they've done,
right.
You'd say, like, that's a team that's built to win in January.
Well, we're going to find out if they're built to win in January. And by the way, it was 2 years ago that you said this about the Chiefs. 2 years ago, and they then lost in the divisional round.
I was out on them last year.
I got to correct myself on this. It was 2 years ago.
Alex Smith.
There's the thing that's going to take them down, right? Like, everyone has it, except for one team. You guys guess who that is?
New England.
Nope.
I don't know.
Kansas City.
Yeah, Patriots won the Super Bowl.
I had to look that. That's
it's okay.
The declaration, I think, was what got me there. Right,
yeah, like, a little
declaration.
It was so definitive.
I didn't just say it. I built up to it.
Yeah,
the declaration
you built it up and wanted everyone to guess who your team was.
The declaration is what really got me there.
Zolak and Bertrand.
It's time to celebrate.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Bert, I disagree with Zoe. I don't think it's wide open. I don't.
I think
the Patriots are getting credit for things they've done in years past. They're not getting credit.
Which they should.
Yeah, I guess to a degree. Like, coaching quarterback's still there. I get that, but I don't think Rob Gronkowski's the same player he was a year or two ago. I don't think that Julian Edelman is the same player he was 2 years ago. I think there's a lot here that has changed. Maybe some of the names haven't changed, but the players themselves have changed. Tom Brady doesn't look like Tom Brady of a year ago, MVP award-winning Tom Brady.
There have been a lot of comparisons to 2006 or 2009, right?
Yes.
And I understand that, like, and it makes sense because that was like sort of the last legs of that iteration of Patriots, and this feels like the last legs of this iteration of Patriots.
Sure.
If they're going to win in the playoffs, it almost feels like it's going to have to be the way the 2006 Patriots won. And that team, if you remember, they lost David Givens in free agency.
Right.
Then they wound up having to trade Deion Branch.
Mm-hmm.
The defense was getting older. And Brady had to be superhuman that year.
That was his best year.
And they wind up, losing in the AFC Championship game to the Colts in a game that, like, where it just looked like they finally ran out of gas. A team that had all kinds of fight finally ran out of gas. And you remember they went up against a much more talented Chargers team. That Chargers team was freaking loaded. And that team, I believe, was 14-2. Now, how'd they win that game? They won that game because the Chargers picked the ball off. It was Marlon McCree, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Troy Brown stripped it out.
Right. And Troy Brown strips the ball. And it feels to me like the margin for error for this team is like that. You know, like, you're going to have to win by being smarter, by being more disciplined, and by taking advantage of the other team's mistakes. And that's one of the things when you watch them on Sunday against Pittsburgh, it's like the 14 penalties, the blown chances in the red zone. Do they have that? You know, and that's, I think that that's where they have to win. They have to win games, being smarter, being more disciplined.
Yeah.
And being better,
all those things you mentioned are things they have not done on the
right.
road.
And that's the thing.
At any point
gotta,
this year.
But he's saying they're going to be completely different.
And that 2016.
Because the margin for error is. Like the,
you're hoping
the margin,
they figure it out.
The margin for error is not what it's been.
That 2016, they lost two games on the road. You know where they were? The places that haunt them.
Denver. Okay.
And
Miami.
They lost in two spots, like two places where you say, all right, you lost on the road in those two places.
Yep.
Sort of get it. Those places are hard places to play for this team historically
right.
and have been for Brady. And so those were their two losses. They had won games on the road. They were 12-4. They, you know, were getting better at the end of the year. They were trending in the right direction, although they did drop their final. Oh, no, they didn't. They won 3 out of 4 in December. Their one loss after Thanksgiving was at Miami.
Was that the shutout?
21-0.
That was too... Oh, you know, that was like the very end of Nick Saban.
They won 6 of their last 7.
That was
the one game they lost was that game.
That was
to
the
Miami.
Very end of Nick Saban in Miami.
Yeah.
I will not be the Alabama coach.
So, and then he was. That was a different sort of situation, even though they, I think, you know, that roster was thin.
I think that, like, there are so I think there's similarities to 09 in that it's like the end of a run for a group of, like, proud old veterans, right?
Right, you got to sort of put it back together again soon.
And I think there are similarities to 06 where it's like, I think this the character that this team has is not like 09. Part of the problem with the 09 team was some of the best players on the team were the worst guys. Like, right? Like, some of the best players on the team were not on board, right?
Sean Springs, Thomas,
Randy Moss, Adelius Thomas. Like, those guys were going off the reservation. And so... That's why I think that team got in the game against Baltimore and got punched in the mouth and just, like, folded.
Like, oh, forget
just
it.
Just folded.
Years over.
Right. And I think this team has, like, you look at the best players in the team now, Brady, Gronkowski, McCourty, like, the core players this year, they're much higher character. I think they're just tougher, better guys than the 09 team. So I think that's where the comparison to 06 comes in because the margin for error is small. And they're going to need to win a certain way. Like, everything looks sort of hard right now.
You know, you keep going back to that comment Brady made in preseason, too. He goes, this team, you know, unique to this year, needs a great quarterback, needs the quarterback to play great. He knew it in August. Like, I've almost had to play perfect. And he hasn't played perfect.
Because Edelman's not Edelman, because Gronk's not Gronk. Yeah,
he knew I got to be great. I have to be great.
And that's the way it was in 06.
Yeah.
That's the way it was in 06. And the other part of it, they need the secondary.
But his desire was stronger to go along and be perfect in 06 than what it is now.
Yeah. I mean,
the desire has got to be changed. It's just human nature.
Yeah.
You get to this point, you're like, why do I have to do this for you? You know, right?
That's it. I got to, you know, you got to answer your convictions. Like what he talked about in Tom versus Time. Like, what are we doing this for?
Mm-hmm.
So he came to peace with something. I mean, he's playing with guys he's 20 years older than.
I also have to want...
They got all the money they need, right. You know?
Let me ask you guys this, too. Like, a lot of the problem on Sunday was details, right?
Yeah.
Like, the pick, you know, not getting the ball out of bounds and situationally, that was horrible. Like, blowing a scoring chance by just throwing one up for grabs like that. Just horrible situational football. You have the 14 penalties. Do you guys... think that so we've been told for so long that the details are so important here.
Yeah.
And I mean, part of Patriot lore is like Rodney Harrison walking into the weight room.
Getting quizzed in the everywhere he goes.
Rodney Harrison walking into the weight room at 6 a.m. and Brady's in there saying good afternoon, right? So we've been told for so long that matters. Is part of this what happened in the spring? Is part of this the fact that the quarterback and the tight end weren't here for 10 weeks in the spring?
Could be. Could be a part of it.
I mean, here's what I have trouble reconciling, and I don't want to make the.
I don't think it's like the reason.
I don't want to make what happened during OTAs out to be like the defining moments of the season. They aren't, you know. But if your margin for error is already small, and we've been told for so long that details matter so much here, And there's so many stories about Brady being the first, like the whole thing with the parking space before, before he got married. You know, like how he had the parking space every year. And,
well, Brady doesn't go to the weight room anymore. He goes to his own clinic up at Patriot Place.
Yeah. So I'm saying, I'm saying, if all that stuff was, if we were told how important all that stuff is, and how important like the no days off thing is, like, does this suddenly not matter? Like, does what happened in the spring not matter when we see they're losing on the details in December? Is that related at all?
Right. I get what you're saying. For all the times that we harped on, they're better because they pay attention to all the little details, right? They do everything the right way. The details are important. Now, all of a sudden, the details are not being as important.
Right.
We should recognize that and say, hey, this is a contributing factor.
Right.
But I don't know if it's the reason, but it's a reason, right?
I mean, I think it all goes, like, again, if this is the 14 Patriots, the margin for error is not the same as it is now. Like,
no.
The 14 Patriots had a pretty good size margin for error there. Like this,
but they also had a much more talented roster.
That's what creates the margin for error. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like the margin for error is created because you have a
great roster. You can make that margin even greater by paying attention to all the details. When you're a lesser roster, you've got no choice but pay attention to all the details.
You have to win
to be able to have
the
margin.
The details, right?
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. It makes sense. It's certainly part of it. I think the much bigger factor is the roster itself. Paulie is in the truck today. Paulie.
Yeah, how you guys doing today?
Doing great. Well.
You know, Britt, I was at that game in San Diego, and I'll tell you, Monty Schottenheimer is, in my opinion, the most underrated coach in NFL history. He brought some tough, tough squads to the fore. Every team he coached, the Browns, Kansas City, and San
Diego.
They choked
on their shoes in the
terrible.
Big spots.
They were overrated.
Those teams would be the Jews who were in your life. They were tough teams. I love so. Anyway, the Cromartie dropped the pop up. That was a bit early in the game. He dropped the pop up. Nobody was in the same area code. I was right down there, right near that play, and that would have been the beginning of the end. I tell you though, the front seven on that team was a lot better than the front seven on this team. And Troy Brown, they didn't run out of gas. Troy Brown was a goat that game, the following game in Indianapolis. Okay, the offensive interference.
Eric Alexander was in coverage on tight end. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
that front was better.
Come on, let me go.
I take this front over that 06 front.
I got a lot to say. Bro, let me go there. I got a lot to say. You still with me?
We're with you.
Yeah, we're with you.
All right, yes. The offensive interference called right at the end of the first half that killed the drive. That would have, they would, instead of being up 20-6, they probably would have been up 27-6. And then he had an option read, and I'm like, there's his brain. When Brady came to the line, his read was to go out. Oh, it was an easy out. He runs right to the safety, and I'm like, what are you doing? And then the camera switches to Brady, and he's giving like the out signal, like you should have gone out. And he was a goal of that game. But I'll tell you what's happened. Are you still with me, guys?
Yeah, we're waiting for your point on this year's team.
The Patriots players are victims, simply victims, of external forces. Okay, yes. Late in the game against Miami, there was a coaching error. They did everything right, but everything right. They ran the clock down, they ran the ball, they kicked the field goal. And then I said to myself, good, now let's squib kick it. So
that's not external. Coaching is part of the team.
Let me finish.
Well, your premise.
Give it a game recap.
Okay, Paulie, this is not the chance for you to call in and monologue about something. If you say if your premise is flawed, then we're going to stop you and your speech. External forces? Coaching is an external force of a team?
No.
No.
Not allowed.
So stop.
Players
stop right there.
Players don't count coaches as something external outside of the team itself. That doesn't work like that. It's not
good
an external.
Grief.
That's not an external matter.
He was loopy today.
Well, I mean, we could have gotten to more of the point if we didn't have to do the 2-minute recap of both the divisional and AFC championship.
Yeah, coming
round
back next hour, Paulie's going to recap the 1987 Celtic Laker game 3 that he was at.
External
forces.
That went over the Chargers was one of, like, maybe the biggest upset they've ever pulled here outside of the Rams Super Bowl. Like, since they've been here, like, that Rams team, or that Chargers team was freaking loaded. You had Sean Merriman all hopped up on who knows what, right?
Steroids.
Maryland.
Sean Phillips off the other edge. You had LaDainian Tomlinson, Vincent Jackson, Antonio Gates, Marcus McNeil at left tackle, Darren Sproles. I mean, that team was freaking ridiculous. ridiculous.
They're stacked.
Yeah.
Oh, a Marty coach team. Just an underrated coach.
Cromarty, oh, Jammer, like Edwards, the middle linebacker. Jammer. They were ridiculous. Jamal Williams at nose tackle. Like they had.
Cromarty was good.
Hardwick at center. They had players everywhere. Like that Patriots team had no business going in there and winning. And because they were smarter.
And they nearly went to the Super Bowl. If Richie Caldwell's not dropping balls in Indianapolis a week later, they still could have overcome.
Yeah, they all had the flu that week, and then it was like 90 degrees. Pullian found out.
That they're just like, getting water and ice on the sidelines.
So like the old wise tale there was that Pullian found out that the flu was going through the Patriots locker room that week.
Yeah.
And so the stadium, like, and we were where the old press box was at the old RCA Dome. It's way up, so you felt
the
all the
ceiling.
Heat. Yeah. It was so hot in that building. I mean, it felt like 85, 90 degrees in that building.
They wanted to try and dehydrate everybody.
Maybe a little competitive
edge. That's all right. You know, they had that and pumping in the crowd noises.
Yeah.
Just don't bitch and complain, Pullian, when people play defense. That guy's the worst.
Well, he used to complain.
He's the easiest guy to hate in the NFL over the years.
He used to complain when they grew the grass here. Remember they would leave the tarp off?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the grass was too wet. But out there, they're pumping in crowd noise and cranking up the heat. What goes around comes around, Pullian. Okay?
Zolak and Bertrand.
Do they pose a threat?
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You're all about those boy bands, though.
I do like boy bands. Which one is that? Is that Backstreet?
This is NSYNC.
NSYNC.
Timberlake and NSYNC.
I would go Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, New Kids on the Block, third. Distant third.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like blasphemy.
I mean, not blasphemy.
These cards. I see it.
Okay.
Ooh. Man, they're all good boy bands. A little different.
So I wasn't big on Timberlake until he saw him in person.
He's amazing in person.
I can't believe he can dance that way. I just can't believe it.
I didn't know what the hell you guys meant. Like, he's amazing. I'm like, what? What did you do?
Timberlake in person.
You mean seeing him perform.
Yeah. He's amazing in person.
Oh, my God. With his shoes untied and he can still dance that way.
Oh.
The balance.
It's like a magic trick.
It is. White boy can dance.
617-779-0985. Let's get to Chris in Rhode Island. He's up next on Zolak and Bertrand with Bert Breer. Hi, Chris.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Just so everybody knows, Paulie's called back 17 times since we hung up on him.
Why do you have to do that?
Well, and I hung up on him twice in the other room, too.
You don't have to air that out publicly.
He's calling back.
No, he just called back. He said he's going to call you during the next commercial break to talk to you, though.
I already talked to him.
But he's calling specifically for you, so.
Well, I'll be right in. Yeah, I'll get off my ass to come in there and talk to him. Yeah, that's going to happen.
Chris is in Rhode Island. Hi, Chris.
I just had a quick point to make, and then I wanted to ask Zoe a question.
Okay.
I feel like if you're a Patriots fan, then Brady, you have to put a little bit, I'm not saying a lot like you guys said, I agree with you. You have to put a little blame on Brady for not being there on the voluntary workouts, because not only for him, but I feel like it's to make other players better. And he was the only one that was like in the entire NFL that didn't go, right? Like he was
okay.
The only one.
So if they win the next 2 weeks and Houston loses in Philly, which is probably going to happen, and they become the number two seed, what are we going to say about it then? When does that not become an issue?
I feel like it's
him not being there in the offseason.
They don't lose in December. They lost in December this year, and they just
correct
don't
fact.
Look right to me. He doesn't look like 100% Tom Brady to me. I mean, I don't think he's.
But Chris, do you think that's the reason why he looks this way?
No, I think he's made a couple mental mistakes that he usually doesn't make. But I just feel like I said, not maybe for him, but for other guys too. I mean, it's not just for him. Like, you know, he could have been there making other guys better out there. You know, for the voluntary workouts. But and I just had really one quick question for Zoe. Edelman, he looks like he's lost a lot of confidence in his hands. Like. He does this thing like that last when he dropped that ball this last game. he jumped up in the air to catch it when I don't think he needed to jump in the air, right? You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to, you know,
something's different.
Keep your feet on the ground.
He looks a little stiff.
And then he looks like something. It looks like
it's his leg.
And then,
it's in his head.
Jumped at it. Yeah, and then he let it come into his chest instead of grabbing it with his hands. I think he's lost a lot of confidence in his hands, and I'm just going to hang up and
Okay,
Chris. I mean, you're talking about two of the biggest targets lacking confidence. I don't think he lacks confidence. I think it's just he has not hit stride for whatever reason. I think he's got leg issues. I think he's got leg issues, whether it's the foot or the knee.
Well, and a lot of times,
more the foot.
A lot of times, guys, and we saw this with Wentz too, coming back off the ACL. A lot of times, guys come back off the ACL.
Watson early in the year,
and they're compensating, you know, and so then other problems pop up.
Yeah.
And it certainly happened with Wentz. I think it's happened with Edelman. Watson, like you said, was another one who got hurt somewhere else as a result of the acclimation process coming back, you know, learning what's basically a new leg. So it does feel like there's something in Edelman's head. The drops, the penalties, there was the procedure penalty and the false start.
Back-to-back plays.
Yeah. I mean, it's
lining up wrong on the line and a false start.
Yeah. That happens with a veteran player, that happens when a guy's thinking too much. And
so that would, you know, tell you that
the false start
is a crazy thought.
The false start I get. He's condensed in a slot to the left. There's a guy, there's a blitzer over top him that breaks the line of scrimmage.
Right.
But they don't allow him to get back. See, Julian moves. And that's what made him flinch. That happens. That's a natural movement. Mm-hmm. A misalignment is just that. I mean, that'll never happen again.
Yeah.
It won't. He's not going to screw that up again.
But it's like, isn't it indicative of a guy who's probably swimming a little mentally out there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You can just tell in his face. It looks like anguish every time you see him, his face. He's fighting for something. It's just the head down on both knees, bent over, and it takes forever to get up. He finally gets up. He limps to the huddle. He's okay for the next three plays. Then he catches one play four, but then he gets dinged again. You know, he is fighting through something.
Bill Belichick is going to speak any minute in Foxborough. When he does, we're going to send it live to his press conference. Diddy's in Plainville. Diddy.
Diddy, my man.
Hey, what's up, guys? Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Merry Christmas to you.
Real quick, I mean, when I watched the game, like Sony Michel right up the middle, I know he's small running back, but he goes down easily. I get it. The Patriots don't value the running back. I just want to hear your guys' input. When is the perfect time to set up that play action? You know, blow it off the top vertical.
What was that? Was that groan he just had there? He did a deep breath.
You're just taking a breath after trying to get all his points out.
You hear that one again?
In a quick fashion. Good job.
Play action works after the run. I mean, you got to commit to the run a little bit.
They didn't do that early in this game.
They did it late. It came out in the second half and said, we're going to pound the rock. And then right then I'm thinking, because they got the midfield. And I even said to Bob, oh, this is quintessential Josh right here. They've just been running. They got the midfield. Get ready for the play action shot play. And it never happened. They just continued to run. And then they threw that slip screen to Edelman. It went right through Dupree's hands. And then they end up stalling and kicking a field goal. Yeah.
They didn't commit to it early. And then they realized it. And there's even part of me that wonders if there was that playing out on the sideline of McDaniels being talked to by Belichick. Like, just running at them, Josh. You know how we've seen that before? I wondered if that happened. All of a sudden, they ran seven straight times on the drive that they kicked the field goal on following that 3rd and 16 where they got the flag.
It's been awfully quiet.
Hogan, that was
a joke. It's been awfully quiet on the Josh McDaniel front.
We're going to go to Foxborough. Here is Bill Belichick.
Up and button up there. So, offensively, they've got a lot of explosive weapons. We didn't see Allen. He's been impressive. Foster. They have a lot of big plays. Receivers have done a good job. Obviously, Clay and the backs, Ivory and McCoy. So, a lot of weapons there. And defensively, at the top of the league in a lot of categories. Playing very well. Don't give up a lot of points. Don't give up many big plays. Make you earn everything. And we're going to have a lot of well-executed plays to move the ball and score points against them. We're able to do a lot of that up there, so hopefully we can improve on that this time. But they're very well coached, and they've got they have a good scheme. They play hard, they play well, and they make you earn everything.
So you said on the radio that obviously it's a different offense than what you saw when Derek Anderson was the quarterback. How much of what they're doing with Allen is some of the design runs, or is this most of what he's getting run the football?
They do both.
How does Allen compare to compare to some of the other mobile quarterbacks you guys have seen this season?
He's good. The 300-yard games, and he's a leading rusher, so he's a good player.
Foster's been pretty explosive up the field, he could also come in short too. How dangerous is he from what you saw?
He's averaging 25 yards. It's a lot to average. So, very explosive player and gets behind the defense, catch and run player. He's fast, really fast. Allen's got a great arm, can't overthrow him. He can't outrun the quarterback. Quarterback can get the ball down the field to him. So, it's been very exciting to watch.
Does it speak to Alabama's depth that Foster and I would be down to call for these type of rookie season?
Yeah, you'd have to talk to Alabama about that. I don't know.
Are they doing things differently than with Josh Allen under center that they did with Anderson for you guys?
Well, Allen played at the beginning of the year. So, they're in a little bit of a transitional period there in the middle of the season. No, I mean, I think their offense is their offense. It's game plan offense, so you'll see different things from week to week.
Bill, when it comes to McDermott's history, he obviously has been on, coached on a team that had a big mobile quarterback in Cam Newton. I know he's more of a defensive coach. But do you see any similarities in terms of some of the things that Allen can do physically just because of the size and athleticism combination?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they both have a lot of skill, but we're focused on Allen this week. He's big, he's fast, he's got a strong arm, he's accurate. He can stand in the pocket and throw, he can get out. There's some design runs, there's some quarterback scrambles, there's some scrambles where he runs, or scrambles where he extends plays and throws it. So, I don't know. It's our guy to defend. I mean, he had almost three quarters of their total offense against the Jets, so it's a lot.
Stephon Gilmore was named to the Pro Bowl last night. Just how much improvement have you seen from him since the first time he stepped in the door, and just how impressive has he been this season?
Yeah, Steph had a good year. Thought he had a good year for us last year. I mean, all players improve as they've been in the system longer. So, but he was a good player when he got here. He's had a good year for us.
He's already, I want to say, doubled the amount of balls he's batted down this year from last year. What would you attribute that to? Is that game plan, just the skill set, maybe a little bit of both?
Yeah, I thought he had a good year last year, too. So, I don't know about all the stats and all that, but I thought he had a good year. He's having a good year this year.
Hyde and Poyer, are they interchangeable safeties, or do they have defined roles for the team?
Well, Poyer's really a strong safety. Hyde's a free safety, but they don't always rotate the Poyer side. Sometimes Hyde comes down, but Poyer's down more than Hyde is. And there's a decent amount of split safeties, too, where they both are.
They play a lot of different types of coverages. Switch it up a lot in the back end. What kind of challenges does that
present? Yeah, they do a good job of disguising. And they're a heavy zone team. But they do a good job of disguising their zones, their blitz zones. Split safety, post safety, which way their rotation's going.
What did you notice from Ryan Lewis, a player who actually spent a lot of time with? What have you noticed from him?
Missed the last two games of the concussion, and he hasn't played much.
Coming off a game against the Lions, how does that help, or does that help at all as you're sort of watching the last game, because they do some similar maybe concepts as you guys?
We watch all the games. So.
Well, aside from the change of quarterback, what's the most significant difference you see between this Bills team and the one you saw at the end of October?
Say overall the big plays they have from the receivers and the quarterback. Quarterback's a big difference. I mean, that's a big difference right there. But the receivers, you know, no Benjamin. Foster's emerged. They're much different. And the other guys have continued to play well. Zay Jones, McKenzie, Clay, Ivory, McCoy. You know, Kroom's come on. Tight ends made some plays for him. So he seems to get more involved. But again, they're a game plan team. They do things differently from week to week. But they've gotten production from a lot of different players.
What's the approach, Bill, with your defense? Does get close enough to Allen to make a play? I mean, is there a different technique that you have to use when you're going against a bigger player? Obviously, you're a big quarterback last week.
Yeah, that's sure. It's different, and he's strong. He's a strong guy. We've seen him stiff arm some people. He definitely is fast, can outrun guys. So you have to take good angles and obviously wrap him up to try not to let him get started.
Bill, you played a big, strong quarterback last week who got outside the pocket on one particular key play for a third and long conversion. Is there a coaching point that can carry over to this game in that situation? Like in John Simon's case in that completion to Samuels, and kind of caught in between. You got a mobile quarterback, but he hasn't yet gotten the line of scrimmage, and there's a pass play that could unfold.
Yeah, there are scramble rules that we go through from the pretty much first day of training camp, offensively and defensively, and then there are obviously a lot of sub-bullet points to general rules based on specific situations and so forth. So not trying to overcomplicate it, but there's some things have application at some times and some don't. Depends on whether you're in man coverage, zone coverage, what kind of other things that could happen in the play. And the same thing offensively, what type of pattern you originally have called, where the quarterback scrambles, and kind of general guidelines on what to do. But each play is different, obviously, each scramble and each situation's a little bit different. The distribution's a little bit different. So within those general guidelines, there's flexibility and some freedom for players to try to make decisions and do the best thing that they can to try to create space and get open and the quarterback to have options so we don't run together or we don't run guys into him when we're trying to separate. And vice versa, they're trying to separate us and how we try to handle that. So yeah, each one's a little bit different.
That is Bill Belichick. He is powered by Oakers Company, New England's premier technology and audiovisual solution provider for over 97 years. Visit OCKERS.com. That's Oakers Technology for Tomorrow.
Waiting for your electrical supplies during the day or sitting in traffic is for the birds. Use the GCE Night Train from Granite City Electric and get access to over $50 million in local inventory with a free guaranteed overnight delivery of your electrical supplies anywhere in New England. So avoid wasting time waiting in line and sitting in traffic. Order by 5 p.m. and you'll have your materials the next morning by 6 a.m. guaranteed. Visit GCENightTrain.com to get on board the GCE Night Train today. Granite City Electric, proud partner of the Boston Bruins Radio Network.